a place known for its glitz and glamour, this year's annual gathering of the Milken Institute in LA didn't disappoint. Among the ranks of CEOs, fund managers, and philanthropists mingling in the sunshine were a splattering of A-list politicians and celebrities taking to the stage at the Beverly Hilton, including Argentina's colorful president, Javier Milei, Elon Musk, and Bill Clinton. Welcome to Power Play from Politico, where we talk to some of the world's most influential people on both sides of the Atlantic. I'm your host, Anne McElvoy, and this week's Power Play is among the power brokers at Milken's Very High Net Worth annual jamboree. My guest is a local, Kevin McCarthy. He made history by being the first Speaker of the House of Representatives to be unceremoniously ousted during a legislative session last October. As the race for the White House now warms up, might he make a return to the front line? And how does he really feel about that highly public downfall? Kevin McCarthy, welcome to Power Play.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
So we're on home turf here for you in California. You represented the state ultimately in the House of Representatives. It's your first time at Milken since you stepped down from Congress at the end of last year. So you're mingling with luminaries from both sides of the Atlantic, which is why you're here on our transatlantic podcast. There's definitely a buzz on this circuit, but you must miss the Washington fray, particularly in the way that you were forced to depart it.
Well, look, I miss a big part of it. There's some people I don't miss at all. So
a long list.
No, never a long list. I enjoyed every minute of it. I think public service, it's an honor. There's less than 13,000 people that ever had the privilege to be a member of Congress. And so I took it very serious. I served 17 years. I was able to win two majorities, which are not easy to do, which go the last 75 years, it's only happened three times, right? And so the last 5 years to be the leader, only leader to win seats every time. But what's important for the party itself is what I focused on too. A lot of policy, but in those wins, we elected the most Republican women, the most Republican minorities in the history of the party. So the party's in very good shape.
Let's stay with the circumstances that led to your departure from the stage, your downfall as Speaker. You're the first holder of that office to be removed during a legislative session. You were challenged by a small number within your party, led by fellow Republican Matt Gaetz, over the deal you'd made with Democrats to avoid a government shutdown.
That wasn't the reason.
What was the reason?
Okay, so Matt Gaetz, it was only eight Republicans partnering with all the Democrats. Matt Gaetz has an ethics complaint and investigation of paying underage women for sex. And there was an ethics investigation going on. And one thing I never, ethics committee is an equal number of Republicans and Democrats, and I will not get involved with it. And Matt Gaetz wanted me to stop the ethics complaint. And because I did not, he made a motion to vacate. And 94% of the Republicans stayed with me, but eight Republicans went there. And every single Democrat, even though Nancy Pelosi said even before every other speaker and before I was sworn in that they would have never allowed that. And then now you watch the Democrats now are back to where they said they would never allow it. I think it was done. Matt Gaetz moved it for his own personal failures in life, and the Democrats did it for their personal gain.
Mr. Gaetz does deny wrongdoing in this regard. You've also suggested, I think, elsewhere that he should potentially be in jail.
Yeah, no, I said it then, too. When was the jail comment? It is known that Matt Gaetz has been investigated for the last 4 years. There are people in jail that associated with him for the exact same thing, one, I think, serving for 11 years. This is a long history. Matt Gaetz came to me on the floor wanting me to stop the investigation. This is proven by everybody out there. Matt Gaetz tries to deny something, but the ethics community is investigating it now. If you look at the reports in America from ABC and others, the women claim that, yes, that they were paid. They've got texts of Matt Gaetz flying them to different locations. They've got people in jail over it. So I'm sure Matt would try to deny it, but I think the court system will be able to have to play it out.
Just standing back from that, do you think you could have handled the crisis differently then, or does the blame lie squarely with those who ousted you?
I think you could look back at all different things. I mean, if you wanted me to break the law and stop the ethics complaint, I could still be Speaker. But I'd rather stand on the merit of doing what is right. Is it wrong that Democrats all joined in something they said they wouldn't for political reasons? Well, they have the choice to do that.
You could have negotiated with Democrats for support in defending you as Speaker. Do you think that was a miscalculation? You sometimes wake up thinking, oh, I could have done this in a different way to a different
outcome. Not one day.
Not one day.
Not one day. Listen, Nancy Pelosi became Speaker when I became leader. I became Speaker with a 5-seat majority. I want 5 more seats in California. I've always gained seats as leader. I don't think the Democrats view their ability to win the majority to keep me as Speaker. I don't think they would have negotiated. I think what they would have asked for is to make them Speaker. That's not the case, you know? You win some, you lose some. I give as good as I get.
Mike Johnson is putting down rebels on the right on the strength of Democrat support. What do you make of that, given that you said you wouldn't handle it differently again?
Well, no, I think the Democrats and I think the Republicans, too, see what has transpired with the motion to vacate and 3 weeks trying to find another person to serve is very, very difficult and it's chaos for America. I don't think anybody wants the motion to vacate. So I don't support that motion to vacate. And I think it's good on the behalf of Mike Johnson, that it doesn't happen.
What do you make of rebels in the party now, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, trying to force a vote there to remove Mike Johnson from the speakership? What would your advice be on how to counter
that? Well, it's different than a Matt Gaetz. Like, Matt Gaetz went and did a privilege motion, so he just had to vote. What Marjorie Taylor Greene has done is hasn't made it privilege, so you didn't have to vote. I think her argument is going to be about policy. She wants to have a policy discussion. And that's probably a fair thing to have. So have a policy discussion. American politics and government is designed to find compromise. So you're never going to get 100% of what you want. You're always going to get people arguing the other side. You got a tight majority. A motion to vacate doesn't allow a speaker to be speaker. And you need to have that. Otherwise, we've got a coalition government, as which it seems like they have today, and that's not as productive.
She says, I can't wait to see Democrats go out and support a Republican speaker and have to go home to their primaries and then run for Congress again. Doesn't she have a point that by propping up Mike Johnson, it could weaken their support and open the door to a large Republican majority in November? Now, that, of course, would have that knock-on effect of weakening Johnson's re-election attempts.
Well, you asked me earlier, should I have done a deal? I couldn't live with myself if I did a deal with the Democrats. I'm Speaker. I'm the Republican leader. I'm not going to hold a seat based. I had 96% of the Republican support. I think that has the right to be the leader of it, right? And so cutting a deal.
Can I just ask a question which might sound a bit naive, and it's with the sort of transatlantic hat on, if you like.
Yeah.
Some people listening to you now will think, well, this is interesting. This is fluent. I understand where this guy's coming from. I probably knew about that news story, but they may not know all the weeds, the Politico weeds. And yet they will hear you say, I couldn't live with myself if I'd done a deal with Democrats. Is that a lack of bipartisanship?
No.
Or is that specific to the circumstances in which you found yourself?
Well, you got to understand. I just worked a debt ceiling agreement with the president, a bipartisan deal that people complained about. They cut $2 trillion, reformed welfare, a NEPA reform, things that you never had before. When you talk about doing a deal, it's different than bipartisanship. So it's not less support a bill, it's changing the structure of the House. So we are the majority. So what it would say to do a deal with the Democrats, they get equal number of committees, meaning the same size as Republicans, and you can't pass anything, even though you're the majority and they're the minority. So if you can't sustain being Speaker by your own majority, should you sustain it? Then my question, no. So either I'm going to win Speaker and be the leader with the majority, otherwise it's not right to be the Speaker.
An implication of this, of course, with a huge economic underpinning for the U.S. And far beyond. Can you see this whole drama kicking off again when that congressional agreement to raise the borrowing limit runs out in early 2025?
No, I think the experience of the removing the Speaker has not been positive for anybody. I mean, what legislation has passed since that originated in the House? Nothing. And so I think it's a lesson learned in the process of not doing again. Unfortunately, I'm the person that had to learn the lesson.
Let's turn to Donald Trump and the direction of the party and that leadership question. Everybody's eyes are on what's happening at the moment in that legal case, which is going on as we're recording you. Are you also following this? And what do you think the implication of this Stormy Daniels case will be?
I don't think the Stormy Daniels case will have much of any play. I think it'll backfire on the Democrats. When they talk about being worried about democracy, trying to keep the lead candidate for the Republican Party off the ballot to try to run a case that people already know about, that no one understands what crime was broken, I think it'll backlash on them in a number of ways. And it seems to have been doing it now.
I mean, it has made its way through to the point where there is a court case. So somebody presumably does understand what the evidence is. Is your contention that even if he loses, it's not going to damage him?
Yes. Well, let's understand this. Let's put it in perspective. You say it's just a court case. Well, no, it's not just a court case. It was brought forth by an individual who campaigned as a Democrat saying he would take Trump to court. It is being held in the second highest county of Democrat vote for Biden in the entire nation. So the world, the country looks at as being unfair. You think about holding either side in contention right before an election. Fairness is an important part in America. And the one thing people feel is it's very unfair, especially when you think about democracy. You try to withhold them from the ballot, being on the ballot in different states. I mean, it just seems over the top. It's not something new. It's something people have looked at before. They don't know what the law was broken. They can't find the law that was broken. And so it seems as though it's only being carried out. And really, I think America would ask this question. If Donald Trump was not running for president, he probably wouldn't be in court today. So if you're going to hold him in court simply because he's running for president, it seems unfair.
I do understand that line of argument, on particularly on that court case. Of course, there are others. I suppose my question is, notwithstanding whether you think it should have happened and that you think there is obviously some bias in the system there, you don't think it's a game changer if he's convicted? If it, for President Biden and his campaign, surely it would be an outcome that they would be able to campaign on.
They're going to campaign on an issue that people already know about. But the country is going to feel inflation. The country feels the border is broken. So that, yeah, the Democrats will campaign on it, and November will tell you whether it mattered or not. But I do believe in a political sense that it's being viewed as, and if you look at the recent polling, you've never had a president running for re-election with such low numbers. You have a President Biden who doesn't go out and campaign. You've got the number one and number two issue is the border and inflation. If you look at the last election that Joe Biden won, he only won because we have an electoral college by 48,918 votes. At that time, he had a plus 10 favorability rating. Today, he has a minus 20. President Trump's numbers are exactly the same. But since that time period, if you look at his polling numbers when it comes to Hispanic Americans and African Americans, has dropped 21% and 40%. When you look at those under the age of 30, which has been a base for the Democratic Party, he's actually losing to Trump by plus 5. You look at the things that are happening around the world, it works against President Biden. Then you have a Kennedy, an icon when it comes to the Democrat Party of America family, actually running against him, which will be on the ballot. It'll come down to six states. You have the riots that are happening in college campuses. Wait till you see a Democratic convention in Chicago. It could look a lot like 1968, which I think will play. And recently, as this week, the Democratic idea coming out of the White House is to have Joe Biden speak less. So how is he going to change that trend if he's speaking less? If he's just going to rely on the court case, that's one thing. But I don't think that pans out. I think the American public are going to want to make a decision based upon policy.
So come on, then nail your prediction to the table here between us. Do you think Donald Trump will win back the presidency?
Yes, at the election today, he will win. If you look at the six swing states, Donald Trump has been leading in all six for the last 14 months. So what's going to change the basis? So if the election was today, yes, he would win. The Republicans would win the Senate. And even with all the chaos in the House, it's easier for Republicans to win seats in this next race than it was for the last two. That doesn't mean they will, but it's easier for them. They're failing behind on money. And that's the one thing in the court case that people don't talk about. It is hurting Trump not being able to be out in campaigning, draining his money at the same time. So that is an advantage that the Democrats are using against, which people think is unfair. But
how would you feel about another Trump presidency?
I think it'll be a much more positive. America will be stronger. I think the world will be safer. The border will be secure. Our economy will be stronger. There'll be more opportunity. Whoever wins the presidency can only serve 4 years. It's not a hard decision for me to support Trump over Biden. America's had to evacuate five embassies. We have a border that has people coming from 160 different countries, millions of people coming across. We caught more people last year in 1 month of February on the terrorist watch list than we caught the entire last administration, 4 years, all in 1 month.
Well, we're going to pause right there and hear more from Kevin McCarthy about the race for the White House after this. And if I could just take a moment to ask you, on behalf of all of us at Power Play, to follow us on whichever platform you get your podcasts, we would really appreciate it. Back in a moment. I don't want to say you're sounding on message, but are you thinking about a possible job in a Trump administration? What would you be up for were he to put you on one of those lists that we keep reading about, not least at Politico?
I don't go seek a job. I want the very best people to serve in government. Not for a lifetime, but to serve in government, because I want government to be efficient, effective, and accountable. I think it's a responsibility, regardless of what administration it is, if you're the very best for the job and you could carry something out, to be able to serve. But it's not something I seek. I've served for 17 years now. I've done my part. But at the same time, even if I'm not serving in the administration, I'm going to serve my country.
I was going to ask if you just felt like staying in the picture. Sounded to me
very much
like...
Look, I've been for 17 years. I've elected more than two, helped more than 200 people get elected to the House and the Senate. It's because I care about the country. I help build this majority. I'm going to help keep it.
Isn't Donald Trump still intent on seeking revenge? Indeed, he's even more fired up about it by the court case, perhaps for some of the reasons, as he sees it, that you have mentioned. You've advised him to focus on renewing America, not seeking revenge. Do you see any chance that he would listen to that?
Very much so. The last comments I've heard him say is the greatest revenge is a strong economy.
Well, he said other things as well, hasn't he?
He's changed reported comments comparing the judicial system
to the Gestapo. So he's not always quite so chill.
Not so chill, but those are old answers. His new answers are the greatest revenge is a strong America. So I think he's learned.
You've had quite a complicated relationship with Donald Trump. I think you denied saying after January the 6th, after the failed insurrection, that you were thinking of asking him to resign. But my Politico colleagues, Alexander Burns, Jonathan Martin, you will now, obviously with us at Politico now, but when they were at the New York Times working on this in depth, released an audio tape proving that you, in fact, did say that. It doesn't sound
no.
like you had a straightforward relationship.
No. So let's be truthful in what was there. Martin went and got a tape that was taped by somebody else that was clipped based upon there was only four people asking me questions, not saying I said this, not saying this is something I went out to do. They were asking me questions about what possibilities of different things. This wasn't something I advocated. It wasn't something I did. So they misled the American public in that basis as well.
But you did say, I've had it with this guy. I think that was a quote that leapt out. I mean, that even jumped the shark, shall we say, to the other side of the Atlantic.
I've had really strong conversations with President Trump. President Trump's had conversations with me, but that's what individuals do. If you think in this world of life that you want a policymaker that's a leader of a party to sit and just say, yes, sir, or yes, ma'am, to who's ever the leader, that's not what I want. I want someone who's going to be strong and tell me my opinion. But I'm going to do it in the privacy that you're going to be able to trust it, that this is my opinion and this is what I'm going to do and this is what I think is best. Those are the type of people. And I respect President Trump when he gives those stuff, but I give it back just as strong as what I think. And I think that's what America wants to see in their policy.
And if I just ask you directly about the January the 6th attack, once and for all, do you think that Donald Trump bears responsibility for the violence on that day?
Look, I think what happened on January 6th was wrong. I've never supported what happened on January 6th all the way through. Since that time, we've got a lot of information that has come forth. I think a lot of people hold responsibility for what transpired that day.
Who are you saying holds responsibility?
There's a great deal. I look at what has happened in America many times before. It happened over the Supreme Court a couple months before, and they never changed for the police. They never gave them the training. They didn't give him the warning ahead of time. The sergeant of arms never talked to me that there was a concern or problem going through. No one ever told me the National Guard were asked to come up.
But the primary figure that people are asking about here is Donald Trump and whether he bears responsibility for it. There can be lots of other failures.
Donald Trump that day told him to be peaceful. Donald Trump wasn't at the Capitol. So I know a lot of people have this Trump syndrome and want to blame him for everything.
Nonetheless, he's found himself in the frame for that. There are many people who do believe that he whipped up the attacks, even if he later backed away from that. Do you think he has learned something from that?
I look forward to you asking Donald Trump, then he could answer that question.
Actually, you've preempted what we always make our last question is, who else should we put on this podcast? can I say, Kevin McCarthy said you should come on the podcast with Trump. You
know, thing people should know, Trump is not afraid to go on press. I mean, I think it would be easier to get Donald Trump on your podcast than it is to get Joe Biden on your podcast.
Well, there you go. We're going to take that. I'm not going to bet on that because I'd like them both on the podcast. But which are great. You must come along more often because you're really helpful with the bookings.
Yeah.
I will just ask you one more thing about this and then we'll move on. And that is, did you and the then Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell back off from an all-out fight with Donald Trump because you feared retribution from the MAGA movement? And in a sense, not unreasonably, given that this was a base of very strong opinion.
No. I don't think the MAGA movement's a negative. I mean, I think the way you ask the question, people will phrase it, oh, that's some type of negative thing. I think making America great is a very positive thing. I'm proud of that movement. I'm proud of where the Republican Party stands with it. And if you take polling today, independents in America want that. If you take the policies out of the MAGA movement, it's overwhelmingly supported. A secure border, a strong military, a strong economy. Unfortunately, people try to make it something negative. I won't walk back from that. I stand with it proudly. I don't see how my policies have shifted from the day I got elected to the day I am now. And I think a lot of that stems from the Abraham Lincoln, the Ronald Reagan, the Teddy Roosevelts. I mean, when you think of the Republican Party, our very first president was Abraham Lincoln. You know, 87 years ago, our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated the proposition that all are equal. He goes on to say, but if we fail, government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from life. He does this during a civil war where we're not the world power, but he understands the greatness of America. Name me another country that's conceived in liberty and dedicated that everybody's equal. The power itself does not rest with one person. It's of the people, by the people, for the people. And so, are you going to have something messy at times? Yes. Are you going to have people that have ideas that could be different than others? Yes. Are you going to debate them? Exactly. But it's kind of what Winston Churchill said. You could always count on Americans to do what's right after they exhausted every other option. And I believe having 4 years of Joe Biden, we have exhausted every other option. And I think there'll be a change when it comes to November.
Your removal from office led to 6 months of stalemate in Congress over support from Ukraine, eventually broken after a bipartisan approach in the last few weeks. The majority of Republicans still did vote against military aid. What would be your advice to fellow Republicans now that that aid is going to Ukraine? And there are some concerns, I read Elbridge Colby talking about this just before you as well on this show, that there may not be enough and that this is going to be the fight that matters. What is your view on this?
My view is very strongly that what I see happening in the world today is a lot like the 1930s. I think the actions of Putin are very similar to Hitler. I think this is a critical time. We should make sure Putin fails in Ukraine for the world to be safe. We should make sure that this axis of evil is broken up, Iran and others. And I think from that basis, we should make this not one party issue, but you need to make the case to all of America and to the free world.
To me, you sound more like a Reaganite than a Trumpite.
If you lived in America during Reagan, Reagan was not the establishment. Reagan was disrupting the establishment. Reagan had to change his speech numerous times and put himself, tear down this wall. Trump has a lot of that in him. Foreign policy could be different, but in my belief, there's also a responsibility when the world is at war. The leader of the free world, the president, how many times has he gone to the American public to make the case of why this is important? He doesn't. He puts a lid on it. How many times has he sat down with Congress where we have numerous men and women that have fought in theater and sit back and say, there are many people who voted no that would vote yes because what they want is, I'm willing to put resources, but tell me what victory is. Tell me what the plan is. It's not just keep sending more money. Show me the plan for victory. And a lot of them have knowledge to do that.
You clearly do like pitching into debate, so I can't resist asking. When you see college campuses here, UCLA and others in ferment over Gaza and Israel, do you ever think of actually just going down to one of those places and So pitching into the argument, I know you're a strong supporter of Israel.
I was just at Georgetown. I was just at Harvard. And I tell you, the students there that came were very polite. We didn't have any disruption. I think it really comes down to, if you're going to be an institute of higher education, of higher learning, that should be your main mission and goal. When you allow people to disrupt, to intimidate, to go after people based upon their religion, you're failing in the job. If you allow them to build a city and not come in and break it up, you are failing at your job. It really comes down to the administration. And then when you finally clean it up, you find that there's a large number of people that are not students there. Who's funding this? I do not want to see the years from now that Hamas started recruiting based upon what's transpiring right now. You have Americans being held hostage after October 7th. How can we forget that?
I think we'll draw to a close there. The traditional final question, I think you answered, you would like to hear Donald Trump on the podcast and Joe Biden. Is that your final call?
I would love, and I'll ask the questions if you want.
Come along and join us. All welcome on the Power Play podcast.
Enjoyed it a lot. Excited to come back sometime.
Thank you. Well, that's all from this edition of Power Play, and we hope you enjoy our transatlantic conversation. Do keep listening. I love having you along on our travels. Next week, we'll be heading back across the pond to Denmark for the Copenhagen Democracy Summit. And we would be grateful if you could give us a review. And I did say it earlier, but we do mean it. Follow us on whichever platform you get your podcasts. The team behind this adventure is Peter Snowden, senior producer here in Los Angeles, and the executive producer in Berlin, Christina Gonzalez. I'm Anne McElvoy. Thank you for listening.